Hare Krishna, welcome. And this is going to be the last in our series on the mind, saving oneself. What do we call this? Saving yourself from yourself. And so if you haven't saved yourself by now, what can I say? This is going to be the last. This is your last chance to save yourself. So I wanted to begin by telling a story. Of course, first let's welcome everyone. Let's see who's here. And Bhakti and Carol and Higher Taste is here, and Scott 322. And I'm here, and Majesh, and others are in line, and Kremlin is here, and welcome everyone. So I want to tell a story that illustrates a principle, something we were alluding to last time, about how easily the mind changes. And so there was a devotee who had a problem. He was upset or depressed. Went to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, let's first have a kirtan. So they had the kirtan, and then Prabhupada said, so your problem is gone? And the devotee said, yes. So sometimes we're in a certain situation, and consequently certain things are bothering us, and then we do something transcendental, and it alters our state of consciousness or our frame of reference to such a degree that the thing that was bothering us is no longer bothering us, or it may still be bothering us, but it no longer is as significant as it was. So, of course, kirtan is transcendental, but sometimes even just changing what we're doing, changing environment, changing association, can impact our consciousness in a way in which we may have been very upset, and then all of a sudden, we're fine. And this is in the world of psychology, they call this a state change or an interrupt. And I used to notice this with my mother. Sometimes she would be upset about something. And she would be on my case or my sister's case or my father's case, or maybe she'd be on everybody's case. And then she would be kind of losing it, for lack of a better word. And then her friend would call her on the phone. And immediately she got on the phone and she was very cordial with her friend and they were laughing. And so her state immediately changed. So there was a different environment that she entered into. Immediately changed her state of mind. So then I learned this process, and I used to do this with my daughter when she was younger, because sometimes it didn't happen often, but sometimes she'd become really upset about something and my wife would just give her to me and say, you deal with her, I can't deal with her. And so once I learned this, I learned that if you're in a situation, you do something very different, you can alter the state of a person to the degree that they forget what was upsetting them. So in this particular case, my daughter was apparently incorrigible, so my wife gave her to me. Nobody could pacify her. So I said, Braja, do you want to rub sour cream on my head? So she was probably 4 years old or 5 years old. So for any 4 or 5 year old kid to have the opportunity to rub sour cream on their father's head is a pretty big thing. And they certainly wouldn't want to miss that opportunity, I don't think. And she jumped on it in a second. So we went in the refrigerator, we got the sour cream, and she rubbed it all over my head, and she was in bliss, or should we say, in ecstasy. She was so happy, and she forgot why she was upset. So it's not common for people to change their state and forget why they were upset, or to not be able to again connect with the upset. Maybe they don't forget why they're upset, but when they connect with it, it doesn't upset them. So that shows the nature of the mind, in that it can alter itself very quickly by changing the environment. So sometimes we'll see that when we're in the association of devotees, or particularly in the association of a person who has a very different attitude towards the world, or a very different personality or mindset, that we tend to, by osmosis, adopt or at least be influenced by that mindset for the time being, at least, perhaps longer. Sometimes it can have a greater effect on us. But it just shows how the mind can change so quickly when the environment changes. Another aspect of how the mind is affected, aside from environment, it's affected by the physical nature of our body, how we sit or how we stand. So for example, right now, if we go like this, Gauranga! 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 So all of you out there can do that with me again. So everybody, why don't you stand up if you're sitting down, you're watching me. Or if you're hearing the recording of this, then you can stand up now, put your hands to the heavens, and yell out, Gauranga! 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 And let's do it again, and while you're doing it, I want you to have a big smile on your face. Gauranga! 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 So how did that feel? Does that feel good? Did that make you happy? Of course it did, because you've just changed your physical state. Now, let me give you an example. Let's say behind a curtain, there was a very depressed person, and a few, like 10 feet away, there was a very happy person. And I ask you now, I would like you to visualize what you think that happy person looks like and visualize what you think the unhappy person looks like. And probably you would visualize the unhappy person, obviously with an unhappy face, depressed face, kind of bent over to some degree and kind of shrugging the shoulders, maybe looking at the ground and moving slow and so forth. And you would expect to see the happy person probably pretty much the opposite. So when we change our physiology in a similar way, it affects our consciousness. So we can easily change our consciousness by physiology, and that's why people like to exercise, and that's why people who do yoga feel a change in their consciousness, because their body is being changed in so many ways. And often the mind just calms down, or the mind forgets what was bothering it, because the body and mind are connected. So the mind is interesting to see how it's affected by environments. And so you might be really upset about something, really bothered by something, and then the environment changes, or the influence changes, or your kid comes in and says something funny, and it's so, or does something funny, it's so funny, you can't be upset anymore. It just doesn't work. So that's one aspect of the mind. So knowing that, then if we're upset, we might seek association, we might seek to call somebody, we might seek to change our posture, to exercise, or just to begin chanting, to have kirtan, to read, to do something which takes our mind off the problem or influences us in a positive way. Now, another example comes from a story about Srila Prabhupada, in which someone had asked Prabhupada or told Prabhupada that they didn't feel like bowing down. And of course, people in general may not feel like bowing down, although it's a natural propensity for us to worship a higher authority or a supreme being. Still, it's not always natural for us to feel the desire to bow. So this devotee expressed that to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, just bow anyway. And the reason Prabhupada said that was because he knew that if you bow down, even if you don't want to, you will feel like bowing down. And that's what he told that person. He said, bow down. By doing it, you will feel like bowing down. Similarly, with kirtan, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would ask the devotees to dance. There's a story. Some devotees were having difficulty in their service. It was in Bombay during the days when they were trying to obtain a permit, and due to the underhanded tactics of Mr. Nair, who had sold the property to ISKCON, but had done something in such a way that he would get the money for the property, but it would not eventually be signed over to ISKCON. So devotees were going through the proper legal channels daily to try to get the proper papers, I forget, you know, some kind of permit or papers. And they couldn't get it. Day after day they were working and working to get it, but there was this conspiracy against them, so nobody would give them the proper papers so that they could rightfully own the property. So one day one of the devotees was back at the temple for the evening program, and Prabhupada could see that this devotee was very upset about what was going on, very discouraged, very depressed. And so Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and he had seen that devotee was not dancing in the kirtan. And Prabhupada said, even if you don't get the municipal permit, still you should dance in the kirtan. So what that means is we may not feel like dancing, we may not be in the mood to even be in kirtan. But if we're there, we should get absorbed in it. We should give ourselves to it, and by doing it, it will affect us. So sometimes that's how we have to deal with the mind. We have to do the things that will uplift our consciousness, even we're not in the mood to do them. Even it might, at that particular moment, go against our nature. Go against what we're feeling, what we're desiring. Sometimes when something bad happens to somebody, they will ask, what's good about this? They will turn it around. So it's not natural to ask what's good about it. It's not natural to see the good side of the bad, but they'll look at it that way. And they'll say, what's good about this? Let's see the positive. So there are always ways we can alter situations which we're in. How can I take advantage of the situation? Now, as we had spoken about in the last few sessions, it's very easy to give in to the mind because the mind is very strong. And so we often tend to give into it. And we tend to give into it in a way in which we believe we have no choice. That's just the way the mind is going. It's where it's going. It's how we are conditioned. It's how we're used to thinking. So we just go with the flow. And then we tell ourselves, that's all I can do. That's just, it's kind of like car is out of control and it's going downhill and I can't control it now and therefore it's going to crash. So sometimes the mind is dictating to us. It's kind of a double trouble for us. The mind goes out of control and then the mind tells us, you can't control me. It's not possible. And we say, okay, that makes sense, and we just let the mind go. So we always have to take into consideration that there is a way to deal with the mind, no matter how strong it is, no matter how much we believe it's going where it's going and we can't do anything. We can always take the initiative, change the environment, change the attitude, change the thought, absorb ourselves in something that will absorb our minds in something other than what is preoccupying it. Otherwise, thoughts can preoccupy us to such a degree that they can degrade us, they can cause us to commit offenses, they can cause us to do sinful things, they can cause us to leave Krishna's lotus feet. Now, let's look at this a little more deeply. When the mind is doing something which is detrimental to our bhakti, if we look at the foundation of those thoughts, the foundation of those thoughts are really coming in the form of how we can enjoy. When somebody doesn't want to serve Krishna, what is that person thinking? Is it neutral? Not really. It's I don't want to serve. And I don't want to serve means what? I want to serve who? What? Myself, my senses. I want to enjoy my senses. So when we talk about the mind being difficult to control, or we talk about having difficulty with the mind, what are we really talking about essentially? We're talking about we are absorbed in thinking about how we can enjoy the senses. That's really what it boils down to, how we can enjoy grossly or how we can enjoy subtly by getting the adoration of others or achieving some form of honor, prestige within our association, within the people we move with or move through, or in the greater world to get notoriety in the world as being a great this or that. So in some way we're trying to enjoy, or we're thinking about how we can enjoy. And if we're not planning, if the mind is not planning, the mind may simply be dreaming or conniving. And sometimes, and this is a subject we didn't talk about, But one of the problems that the mind has is sometimes it doesn't even want to enjoy what it's thinking about enjoying. It doesn't want to enjoy it on the gross level, on the physical level. Sometimes it just wants to think about enjoying it. So the mind can enjoy, often the mind can enjoy something by visualizing what it would be like to enjoy it, imagining enjoying it, going through the motions in the mind, going through the action in the mind of enjoying something, but not actually doing it. That is a big way the mind enjoys. And sometimes we find that we don't really want to enjoy that thing because we know to enjoy it would be troublesome, would be difficult to do. It would be difficult to acquire that kind of enjoyment, or it might require doing something which would have an adverse, sinful, karmic reaction. And so we know that we can enjoy it in the mind. We don't have to manipulate anything external, and we don't have to suffer karmic reaction, although we may suffer on the subconscious level or the mental level, mental disturbance. But there's no karmic reaction. So we think, okay, well, this is a pretty good program. Nobody can see what I'm doing, so I'm safe. If I actually do it and I get caught, then I'll be in big trouble. My wife catches me, if my friends catch me, if the police catch me, it's all over. So let me do it in my mind. I can fantasy it. I can live my fantasy in my mind, and I don't have to suffer externally, and I can create it virtually a lot better and a lot easier than I can actually do physically in the real world. So it's kind of like playing video games. You know, it's not real. So you can do all kinds of things you cannot do in the real world. So it's fun. And another aspect of enjoyment that Krishna teaches about in Bhagavad Gita in the modes of material nature, when he talks about happiness, he talks about happiness in the mode of ignorance as miserable. In the beginning, in the middle, and in the end, you have to suffer. There's never a point where it's just, okay, now it's pure enjoyment. Like in passion, you get enjoyment, but it turns sour. But in ignorance, it's always troublesome. There's always a problem. There's always a difficulty. It's not that you just get pure happiness by itself. It's not like that. So then we may think, well, if I were to enjoy this or attempt to enjoy this on the gross platform, there would be misery involved. But here I can enjoy it mentally and there's no misery. I can just create it the way I want, and I just can bypass all the misery. That's pretty cool, isn't it? So we can live within our minds. We can live in another reality within our mind. So we can be one kind of devotee externally. In our minds, we can be living another life, which is what Prabhupada calls the duplicitous devotee. And this is one of the weeds of bhakti. One should not be duplicitous. One should not appear in public in one way and internally be another person. So when we talk about controlling the mind, it also means to control all the fantasies of the mind. And that's why we have regulated sense gratification. So then rather than just, as Krishna says, being the mithya, the false renunciate or the pretender, then you regulate your sense gratification within a religious way, and then gradually you become detached, rather than just saying, okay, externally I'm detached, and then meditating on sense gratification. That is called mithyachara, the false actor. So we don't want that. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness. When we talk about controlling the mind, really it comes down to this level of just gross contemplation, meditation on how I can enjoy my senses to the fullest degree and have nothing to do with Krishna. That's basically it. And that's what we're battling. So now let's see if anybody has anything. If you'd like to participate in this chat, if you're watching me under my picture, you just click chat. You'll have to choose your own password. Once you sign in, they'll ask you to create a password, and then you can participate. And here I'm looking. So Bhakti and Carol is here. She was away and got back. And Sneha is here. Wonderful. And so we're talking about imagining. And when you consider this imagining principle, you realize that you can imagine a lot greater enjoyment than you can actually get, unless you're a billionaire and you have a billion servants and they'll do whatever you want. And still, even, you could still imagine better than you can get. So the problem with imagining is that if we continually imagine, then we'll take another body to fulfill that imagination. Now, you can see this oftentimes. If you're born with dark skin and dark hair, you might imagine having light skin and light hair and blue eyes. And if you have light hair and light skin and blue eyes, you might imagine what it would be like to have black hair and dark skin. And maybe you'll even go out in the sun and sunbathe so your skin becomes darker. Or maybe you'll dye your hair red. Or maybe you get really into it and dye your hair 5 different colors. And maybe you'll see a person who's a beautiful figure and you think, I wish I had a figure like that. Or if you're a man, you'll see a man who's very strong and muscular and you think, I'd like to have a body like that. Or you see someone with beautiful hair and you think, it'd be nice to have hair like that. Or you see someone who's really attractive and you might think, I wish I could look like that. It'd be nice to look like that. So in this way, what are we doing? We're living in this virtual world and creating another body, a virtual body, an avatar body for us. And we become the next avatar, right? We take another birth and we've created that. We've already created that body in this life. We're like always creating bodies. Krishna is telling us you take birth according to what is on your mind. And here we are in this world creating our next body, thinking, oh, I wish I was thinner. I wish I was bigger. I wish I had bigger muscles. I wish I had a thinner waist. I wish I had this or that. I wish I had this kind of hair, these eyes, this face. I wish I had these talents. I wish I had this intelligence. Now we're just creating another body. So it's all, again, it's all based on sense gratification. I wish I had. Then if I had these things, what would happen? If I had these things, I would be happy because I could enjoy better. And so the mind is such a rascal that it's basing its estimation of happiness on how much I can enjoy my senses, even though we know that's not true. So just see how essentially important it is to control the mind, because the mind lies to us. Otherwise, how can we be so subverted by our mind unless it lies to us? That's how it gets us. It makes us believe things are better or will be better or can be better than they really are. And it convinces us that we are not happy and that we will be happy by enjoying our senses. And then the mind becomes more activated to think, well, how could I enjoy my senses? Even to the point of doing things to harm other people, doing things which are illegal, immoral, unethical. The mind is such a rascal. And then the mind will say, no, it's okay. It's all right. And in the case of us who are practicing spiritual life, the mind might say so many things, such as, it's okay, Prabhu. It's okay, you need this. You're all right. You're a good devotee. You can do this. You do a lot of service. It's okay. You need this. Otherwise, you'll go crazy. Don't worry about it. Don't be so hard on yourself. Don't be a fanatic. It's all right. You can't control your senses. Nobody can control their senses. Just treat yourself right. Give yourself a little gratification. Be easy on yourself. Don't be crazy. If you really get into sense control, you'll go crazy. You'll do something weird. Of course, there is some truth to some degree to these things, but the mind will take it much further, way beyond what we need to do, and rationalize and justify, and tell us, No, but you're a devotee, so it's okay. So then we get into this world of, well, I'm a devotee, so basically I can do everything and it's okay, because after all, I chant Hare Krishna, and therefore it's all right. I mean, I'm doing my best. And what can you expect? And then we have a list of excuses based on what can you expect from me, because this is what I can do. This is all I can do. So it's not healthy to think this is all I can do, or it's not healthy to give in. Excuses are very dangerous for us, because they are rationales for being less than we should be, being less than we could be, being less than we need to be. And certainly being less than Srila Prabhupada knows we can be and expects us to be. And we can always be more, we can always do more, we can always be more controlled. It just requires the will and the conviction and the confidence. Now, another thing that the mind does is it can undermine us in this regard by telling us, you really can't do this. You don't have what it takes. Or to take that further, the mind will tell us, you are especially fallen. You are especially problematic. Nobody's problems are as great as yours. So you fall into your own tattva, your own category. So it's okay for you, because you are highly conditioned in a way that nobody else is conditioned. Now, you think that's funny, but I can't say I've done a thorough study of this, but in the little study I've done, I have found that practically everybody thinks like that. Even people who are very advanced in Krishna consciousness think they're especially fallen in a way in which others are not. And so if we all think that way, then obviously it's not true, but it does serve a function. It serves a function to give us an excuse, a rationale for having trouble and not solving the problem. I'm especially fallen, Prabhu. It's really difficult for me. I did this when I was young, and I have this nature, and I'm not very smart, and I lack self-confidence, and etc., etc. And I had this friend when I was young, and he was really degraded and had a very strong influence on me. And now this, that, and the next thing. And then I wasn't a very good devotee when I was young, and then I left Krishna consciousness for some time. And then when I came back, it was more difficult. And on and on and on. And so we're in this endless loop of convincing ourselves why it's okay to be fallen, or to be absorbed in meditation on sense gratification, where actually the opposite should be how we think. We should be thinking exactly the opposite way. Why we shouldn't be fallen, why we shouldn't give in to it. We should be thinking of all the reasons not to. But the mind is such a rascal that it will engage us in thinking of all the reasons why we should. Doesn't make sense, does it? So, behind all this thinking, then if you go further, there are beliefs there. And maybe the belief is, well, I am, as I was saying, the belief is I am especially fallen. And another belief, I can't do anything about it. Another belief, and it's okay. And another belief, and you can't expect much from me. And those beliefs form the foundation of a mind which will become impossible to control. A really bad belief for us to have is that I can't control my mind. And so many times you hear devotees say this, I can't control my mind. Oh Prabhu, my mind, it's so difficult to control. My mind is such a rascal, I can't control it, it's so difficult to control. I'm sure you've all said this. Not a good thing to say. It instills a belief which then disempowers you. If that's what you believe, then you pretty much defeated yourself right from the beginning. So why would you try to control your mind if your belief is you can't? That would certainly be a waste of energy and a waste of time. Why try when you can't? So you have to go back and look, well, what are my fundamental beliefs that are setting the foundation for my unwillingness to go the extra mile to gain control of my mind? You know that extra mile, you know that junction when you're trying to control your mind, that at a certain point you just hear this voice and says, don't. Just let it go. Just enjoy. Wow. Dangerous place to be. We are continually confronting that junction. Just let it go. Just let it flow downstream. All the time. All the time. We're trying to be self-disciplined. And then we come to the junction. And the mind says, just meditate on sense gratification. Just let your mind go where it wants to go. And if we give in to that, that's the beginning of the end. So that's really, really the junction we want to be very careful about coming to, about making the right turn when we come to that injunction, because it's so easy to turn off and take the wrong turn. Then once you take that wrong turn, then you're going downhill. You're sliding downhill very quickly. It's like you're sliding on a slide, and the slide is covered with petroleum jelly, and you're just going down super fast. And you're sitting on a board, and the board's covered with petroleum jelly, and it's a very steep incline. So you don't want to come to that incline, because it's very hard to get back on track. And as I was saying a few weeks ago, if you even come to that junction, that should be a red flag. Because if we're properly situated in Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't even be coming to that junction, at least not often. And we shouldn't be coming to that junction in a way where we're even contemplating which way we should go. If we come to that junction, if we're in Krishna consciousness, there'll be no contemplation. We'll know which way to go, and we'll take the right route. But if we're weak in spiritual life, then we'll come to that junction, and then we'll have trouble making the decision, the proper decision. So we don't want to be there. I think this was a point that I was making strongly in another class, that if you want to control your mind, then you don't want to allow yourself to come to the point where you have to fight from a weakened position. It doesn't make sense. As long as you can remain somewhat strong, then you'll never have to be in this position where it becomes really difficult to deal with the mind. Because when you come to that position where you're so weak that you're thinking and feeling that it's going to be difficult or impossible to control the mind, that's very dangerous. That in itself is a sign of a problem. You may think, well, the problem is that I'm about to slip. The problem is you're at the junction and you haven't decided immediately not to take the wrong turn. That's the problem, that you allowed yourself to get to that junction. So understanding how the mind works is important, because then when we see its workings, we can better deal with it and say, okay, this is just how the mind is functioning. But as I was saying in the beginning, we can change our state of consciousness. We can change our attitude very, very quickly. We can get up and jump up and down and yell Gauranga, Nityananda. We can run to the nearest kirtan. We can pick up Prabhupada's books. We can put our hands on our japa beads. We can get engaged in some service, even from the material point of view. Prabhupada had often said, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. So even from the material point of view, we can just be busy, take the mind off what's bothering us. Because what's bothering us often is a deep, dark, never-ending abyss. And if we go there, it'll just keep going and going and going. So if we learn the art of controlling the mind early on in our life, it'll be such a valuable tool for us throughout our life. It'll be one of the most, if not the most valuable tools, because then any situation you're in, you can always guide yourself to the best possible alternative in that situation, to do the best thing you can in that situation, rather than be in a situation where you end up somewhere where you didn't want to be, and the excuse is, I couldn't control myself, or my mind went out of control. You don't ever want to be in a position where you have to, where you end up somewhere and say, I couldn't control my mind, because it's not true. And so if you have that belief, it's very important to rid yourself of that belief and replace it with the belief that I can control my mind. That I must control my mind, I need to control my mind. It's a fundamental practice of Krishna consciousness. Now, that was a mouthful, and now I'm going to see if you have anything to say. Okay, I have a question, Bhakti and Carol. Don't know how to write it. Okay, telepathy. Let me see if I get it. No, I don't know telepathy. Okay. We cannot act unless we are allowed. Are our thoughts only when allowed? All our thoughts, are they our choice? Both. Let's take the first point. A lot of thoughts come into our mind because of past samskaras, past conditioning. Like sometimes you're just thinking some crazy thought, and then you're thinking, why am I thinking of this? I didn't consciously choose. That may be true, because past conditioning is there, past images and sounds have entered our sight, entered our ears, entered our consciousness. Past experiences have created images. So thoughts come up, sometimes very absurd thoughts. So what we definitely have control over at that point is what we do with those thoughts and how we process those thoughts and what our next thoughts are when we become conscious of those crazy thoughts. So it goes back to that point of surrender. If we think I can't control my mind, then when those thoughts are there, then we think, well, the thoughts are there, so there's nothing I can do about it. I just have to surrender to those thoughts and let them do what they're going to do. And it often seems that way. And when we don't fight it, that's exactly what it is. We just surrender to those thoughts and allow ourselves to enjoy whatever it is that the mind is trying to enjoy. So if we are conscious that, no, I can do something no matter what I'm thinking of, no matter what thoughts are coming to my mind, I can do something. I can consciously choose to think of something else. Then we'll be okay. I can consciously choose to neglect those thoughts. Then we'll be okay. It's the surrender, it's the rationale, it's the excuse that causes us trouble. Now, further answer to your question, yes, in some points we do have control. Because as we're saying here, a thought may come, but you have control over your next thought. So we do have control over our thoughts, and simultaneously thoughts do come in. They come in the back door. That's the nature of the mind. And a lot of those thoughts are coming because of our fundamental belief that we'll be happy by enjoying the senses. So then those thoughts are feeding, are expanding upon that belief. So it helps us tremendously if we restructure our thoughts and our thought patterns evolve around, I'm not going to enjoy through my senses, but my senses are meant to be employed in Krishna's service. And then naturally thoughts will evolve around that way of, or that attitude, or that belief. So any kind of bad thinking is always an indication that we can do better. We can program, so to speak, our consciousness in a Krishna conscious way. And that's the process. And so it's really, I mean, what it boils down, in my experience, what it boils down to me is this never-ending effort to never give in to the mind and to always know that I don't have to give in to the mind and to always know it. In any situation I'm in, I don't have to give in to the mind, that I can control my thoughts. I can direct my thinking. And just that belief, if that is fundamental to our way of thinking, it's extremely liberating. Because then no matter what happens with your mind, that belief will cause you to react in a way where you take the next step in a positive way. Okay, this is what I'm thinking, but now I will control what I'm thinking in the next moment. I can't control what I'm thinking this second because it's already there. but I can't control what I'm going to think in the next second. It's a very liberating thought, and a very liberating belief, and a lot of us don't really have it, which is why we have so much difficulty controlling the mind, which is why when the mind gets out of control, we go with it because we think we have no choice. That's the big illusion. That's the big lie. And so when we think we have no choice, we are in trouble. Because then we go with wherever the mind is going. And it may be going to some very deep, dark, and nasty places, places we really don't want to live in. So it is so beneficial, so advantageous, so useful to learn how to control the mind. A lot of the mind control also comes in relation to reacting against what people do or what people say. Things bother us, and sometimes we want to lash out against somebody. A lot of times we may say something that we wish we didn't say, or we write something that we wish we didn't write. The next day we read it and think, I wish I didn't send that email. I was mad. I was angry. But if you're in the right understanding, then when these things happen, you will recognize, yes, I am disturbed now, but I can do something about it, and I want to do something about it, and I will do something about it. And therefore, I don't have to react to this disturbance, but I can be proactive. I can consider it, and I can act in a more intelligent way, a more rational way, a more grounded and balanced way. So obviously, that's a great tool to have in your toolbox. So then when you want to react, or you're impelled to react in a certain way, you realize that I don't have to react this way. You realize this is probably not a good way to react. And now let me take a step back and consider how I would like to react, or if at all I would like to react. Great tool to have in your toolbox. I would say a necessary tool if you want to be Krishna conscious. And we can all do this. It is not reserved for some special people, special devotees, special yogis or sadhus. We can all do this. Krishna has given us all the power to do this. The only people who can't do it are the ones who think they can't do it. They won't even try. They just give in to the mind. And so it's kind of like Russian roulette. They just hope their mind doesn't go off track. You know, I'll chant my rounds, I'll do some sadhana, I'll do some service. In that way, my hope is my mind will stay on track. But if it goes off track, I'm in trouble. What can I do? No, that's not the proper way of thinking. The first way of thinking is good, but the second way of thinking is wrong. If it does go off track, we do something about it. Maybe we do more sadhana. Maybe we do more service. Maybe we do more chanting, but we do something. We don't just say, well, I did everything I could today, and now my mind's gone off, so there's nothing more I can do. We'll just have to wait and see if it goes back on track. Sometimes it does go back on track, because the modes of nature continually are changing, but that's not a good way to live. We want to live deliberately. We know what we want. We know where we want to go. We know how we want to think in Krishna consciousness, so we want to create that way of thinking deliberately, not accidentally, not hope for the best. So even if we are chanting and doing sadhana well and fully engaged in service, still we want to be deliberate about what we want the mind to think of and where we want it to go. And especially be deliberate when the mind is distracted into sense gratification. And deliberately pull it away from that. And don't allow ourselves to give in. Don't give in. So Winston Churchill was invited to speak at the graduation ceremony of some prestigious university. They flew him in at great expense. And you know, usually these speeches are 10, 15, 20 minutes, half hour. He spoke for about a minute or less. And he said, never give up. Never give up. Never give up. Yeah, so he spoke like 8 seconds. And then he walked off. That was his speech. So that was his realization. So we can say, yes, that is the realization in controlling the mind. Never give up, never give up, never give up. Because if you do, the mind will just take you for a ride all over the universe. And how will we be Krishna conscious if we let the mind just go wherever it goes? When you're Krishna conscious, you can let the mind go wherever it goes because it will go to Krishna. But until then, we can't do that. So of course, that is why Prabhupada wanted us to fill our ears with Krishna Katha so that it would fill the mind with thoughts of Krishna. So when the mind does go where it goes, it's so full of Krishna, that's where it goes. So that's obviously a proactive plan, which we should all be taking advantage of daily. But still, even in spite of that, sometimes the mind will go somewhere. And then we chant the mantra, never give up, never give up, never give up. Okay, let's see what you have to say about that. So Bhaktin Carol says, that's what I used to tell my son. If it's worth doing, then never give up. So again, Bhakti Carol is asking, is each thought allowed by the Lord? Krishna will allow us to hang ourselves. That's the problem. He'll allow us to think whatever we want to think because he gives us independence. So we are meant to use our independence to make the proper choice. So Krishna will allow us to think whatever we want. He'll also allow us to think of him. He won't block that. So he wants us to make the right choice. That's the point. So, we have 14 minutes. Do you have any questions you would like to ask about this? About the nature of the fickle mind and the nature of controlling that mind. Of course, Srila Prabhupada has told us the best way is to chant the holy names. Problem is that some of us can't even control our minds when we're chanting. The problem is that some of us are so much in the mode of passion or so much in the mode of ignorance, we can't even control our mind when we're chanting the holy name. Mind is crazy. So this brings up a good point, because another aspect of controlling the mind is creating the proper environment which is conducive to controlling the mind. When we live a life of passion and ignorance, it just makes it difficult to control the mind. So we need a sufficient amount of hearing and chanting. We need a life that has a sufficient amount of sattva gun in it. We were talking last week, cleanliness, organization, you know, clean, keep things organized. All these environments around you, they affect you, you know. Don't paint your walls black and have little candles burning. Have the windows open, keep it bright, keep it clean. Create a sattvic environment, it will help control the mind. When you're chanting your rounds, don't slouch over so you're going to fall asleep. Don't sit down in a dirty place. You know, everything affects you. Don't make it difficult on yourself. Create a sattvic environment. Sit properly when you chant. All these things help. So many influences are affecting how we think, affecting our ability to control the mind. So when we are surrounded by influences that make it difficult to control the mind, that's when we start thinking, I can't control my mind. Because, here's an important point, because beliefs are formed through experience. They don't have to be, but generally they are. If you have an experience doing something, then you develop a belief based on that experience. So if your experience is continually that when you chant, you can't control your mind, then you will develop the belief that you can't control your mind when you chant, and that belief will be the foundation of your inability to control your mind. So the experience has instilled a belief. Well, I chant every day and I can't control my mind. Therefore, it's impossible to control the mind. Oh, Prabhu, I do what I can do. I can only do what I can do. And I can't do much because it's so difficult. So then we're stuck. Year after year, we're stuck in that position. We don't have to be stuck in that position, but we've convinced ourselves that we need to be stuck. We have to be stuck. It's the only option we have. You see, so better to create, if you make the effort, then you create positive experience, and the positive experience creates positive beliefs. However, you don't need positive experiences to create positive beliefs. You can create them without the positive experiences, and then the positive beliefs will create the positive experiences. This is a fundamental of psychology. Sometimes we think, well, we can only create positive beliefs as byproducts of positive experience. It's not true. If you decide having the belief that I can't control my mind is useful, then just believe that, even before you have the experience of it. And by believing it, it will create the experience. It's another way of believing. Otherwise, we generally tend to base our beliefs on our experience, or on what other people believe, or what other people say, or what is common wisdom. And if you hang around devotees, it can be seen, or it can be understood in some circles, that common wisdom is, I can't control my mind. So then you inherit that common wisdom, and then you find it extremely difficult to control your mind, even when you're chanting, because somewhere down there, there's a belief that you can't do it, or that it's very difficult, nearly impossible. And that belief is operating on a level that makes it nearly impossible for you to control the mind. Therefore, when you chant your rounds, maybe you'll hear a few beads once in a while. So if you replace it with the belief that I can, or it is possible to control the mind, or the mind can be controlled, I can be absorbed in hearing the mantra, or I can control my mind in other situations that I'm in, then you'll find that you will be able to. Its beliefs become their own self-fulfilling prophecies. And if you don't believe that, try it out. And if you don't believe what I said, then you won't have that experience, which proves my point that what you believe becomes your experience. So, can't get around that argument, no matter how you look at it. Okay, so, what we're going to do in the upcoming shows, because I think we've exhausted this, at least for now, we've had, how many shows have we had, Uddhava? At least 10 weeks of talking about the mind should give you a lot of food for thought in dealing with it. And what I want to start doing next week is a series on Srila Prabhupada. Because we have so many devotees in Alachua who were initiated by Srila Prabhupada, we have this wealth of lila, of katha, about Srila Prabhupada, and I felt, why not share it with all of you? Why not invite as many devotees as we can over the next few months to come and speak about their experiences with Srila Prabhupada? And then we'll have this ocean of nectar, and it'll all be recorded, and it will all be available to you anytime you want to access it. So that's going to be the program. So I will make the attempt to organize this, and I will invite various devotees to come and speak about their experiences with Srila Prabhupada and their realizations. I will also speak, and hopefully we can line up one new speaker every week. I believe there are 150 Prabhupada disciples in Alachua, somebody said. So that will take us 3 years. Of course, I don't know if we're going to get all of them, but I suspect we could easily go, if we're lucky, we could go for half a year just on this topic. And I think this is going to revolutionize your Krishna consciousness. Because hearing about Srila Prabhupada is unlike hearing about anyone else. And it's very purifying, it's very inspiring, it's motivating, and it's motivating specifically in a way that will make you want to surrender more and more to Srila Prabhupada's service, and it will help you understand the Krishna conscious philosophy in a very practical way by hearing how Prabhupada dealt with different situations and different circumstances, and how he applied Krishna consciousness in those circumstances. So I think it's going to be very helpful for everybody. Perhaps more helpful than anything we've done, or at least uniquely helpful. So we look forward to seeing you next week. Tell all your friends about this. You're not going to want to miss the nectar, because it's going to be flowing very thickly when we hear about Srila Prabhupada. So I want to thank you all, and I pray that you will become the master of your mind, the master of your consciousness, the master of your own beliefs, and the master of your march back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, thank you, and we'll see you next week.